it's been another record-breaking year for Milwaukee, but not in a good way. According to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, there have been 193 homicides in the city in 2021. The previous record was 190 set last year, and there's still 2.5 weeks left to go. 90% of those deaths involved guns. It's a similar story in other cities around the country. ABC News recently reported that a dozen cities, including St. Paul, Minnesota, have also reached all-time highs for homicides, and like Milwaukee, some of the broke records that were just set last year. Experts say there's no one clear answer for the jump in homicides, but they've got some suspicions. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to this uptick in homicides over the last couple of years? Are you worried about violent crime in your own community? What do you think would need to happen to bring those numbers down? Do you work in a field where you see these firsthand as a police officer or in a hospital? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Janice Awama is an assistant professor in the Department of Justice, Law, and Criminology at American University. Her research interests include bias and hate crimes, communities and crime, gun legislation and violence, and policing. Janice, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, after a violent 2020, I think there was a lot of hope that it would be a one-year blip. Unfortunately, 2021 doesn't seem to be bearing that out. Were you surprised to see those numbers stay high this year?
I was surprised that the numbers remain that high, particularly with the expectations that as we reopen during the pandemic, that would be a lot more opportunities for violence interrupting programs like going back to school, a little bit more of a normal routine. So it is unexpected.
Where are we seeing this? We see the headlines, of course, about big cities. I've seen some smaller stories that say, you know, smaller sized cities, other communities are seeing upticks in homicide. What do we know about that so far?
So far, we won't know anything until the following year, but it looks like based on some of the preliminary data we have for 2021, that some of the largest cities are experiencing some spikes, significant spikes, nearly twice as many homicides, twice as many aggravated assault cases. Some of the smaller cities are also seeing some of that, not quite to the extent of some of the larger metropolitan areas, but it looks like across the area in rural, suburban, and urban areas that there is a spike. The extent of that definitely varies across different areas.
Let's get into the why now. And I think there are a lot of easy answers that maybe any one of them isn't always borne out. But what do you look toward, Janice, to explain these increases?
Sure. You can view the increases. It's very difficult to say, and we probably won't know for a couple of years, but there's two different thoughts that have come up. One is associated to the pandemic following COVID-19, of course, and the second is changes in policing. The first, obviously, the pandemic has led to an increase in unemployment. A lot of individuals at home trying to take care of sick relatives, and of course, some of those stay-at-home restrictions. The lifestyles that we now carry have dramatically changed since prior to COVID, prior to March of 2020, that possibly could have an impact on some of human behaviors. Also, some of the institutions that we generally depend on to help interrupt some of the violence that takes place. For example, education. We know that for a fact that with the closing of so many different schools across the United States, in light of the spikes in COVID-19, have led to a lot of kids at home, a lot of kids on the streets that don't have homes to go to, the lack of after-school programs that we also see as an opportunity to divert some of that violence, to provide assistance to some of those at-risk students that could potentially be violent prone or have also been closed as a result of COVID-19. Both government and non-government agencies that are generally there to divert some of that violence were no longer available during the pandemic. On the second hand, we also had changes in policing, specifically changes in policing as a result of social distancing, trying to reduce the number of citizens to police contacts because of a fear of COVID-19. The number of protests we felt since last summer associated to or concerned with the lack of trust and a lack of legitimacy with policing have also affected policing. A number of protests, for the most part, have removed some of those police officers from the smaller communities into those areas that we knew there were going to be police protests. Of course, the lack of trust and legitimacy by citizens, meant that citizens were now going to take justice into their own hands and or also not report crimes because they no longer trust the police. They don't view them as a legitimate source to provide them with assistance. And so the likelihood is these two particular areas that do overlap have influenced some of the crime that we are seeing from last year and the crime that we are seeing even this year up until December of 2021. And the likelihood is that the spike in violent crime will be found in the national FBI data once it comes out by the end of the following year.
Talking to Janice Owama, assistant professor in the Department of Justice, Law and Criminology at American University, looking at increases, substantial increases over the last couple of years in the number of homicides, especially gun homicides, especially in big cities around the country. Milwaukee sadly just set a new record, breaking last year's record. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the topic, your questions for our guest, solutions you might like to see. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I want to tackle that last point you just brought up, Janice, about lack of trust between communities and police, maybe leading to people not reporting that smaller crime, and then that festers and leads perhaps to a homicide. How does a community start to rebuild that trust? How does a law enforcement agency start to rebuild that trust?
Absolutely. I think communities can start engaging in some discussions with police agencies, whether through an organization, whether through separate opportunities or events that happen to take place in their own community, and start really thinking about not going back to what is already in the books for policing, but thinking about innovative ways of trying to change policing. Obviously, one of the concerns we've had is the lack of reports, the underreporting of certain crimes. For example, there was also a spike in hate crimes. The underreporting of hate crimes meant that police officers who depend on citizens to engage in these types of issues and try to resolve these types of issues are no longer aware of any type of incident taking place. Police agencies, on the other hand, can think of their policing practices. Policing practices that generally carry a view of being discriminatory in nature, for example, stop and frisk practices, require almost a review to try to better understand whether or not they are actually leading to discrimination, they are actually leading to racial profiling in their own communities. Some of these conversations, while they are taking place in some cities, are not taking place in various different locations. They're not taking place and allowing citizens an opportunity to voice their concerns. There is also missing data and information on how policing has changed, whether it can change, and how we might go about doing that. And I will say now is a good opportunity, particularly as you see new leadership in so many police agencies, a new police chief coming up in so many different cities, to start engaging in those types of conversations and creating a new platform for citizens to engage with those police agencies.
I want to throw a couple other suggestions I've seen out there that people have linked to the rise in homicides. Police agencies are facing the same problem that many other employers are. They can't get enough people onto the job. Some of that might be driven by protests. Some of it might be driven by people retiring earlier because of COVID or wanting less risky types of work. Do you see this as a personnel problem in part?
Absolutely. Almost every major agency we've spoken to is extremely understaffed. They're understaffed and they're overworked. There's been a lot of police officers who've since retired, a lot of police officers who've had to take medical leave, either because of their own families, their loved ones having to take care of them during the pandemic, and they're tired. And that is something that police leadership really needs to account for. They need to think of better strategies to help their police employees in order to address some of their concerns they have, particularly as so many police officers had to take leave because of their kids, because of their significant others. And of course, there's also concern with how do we start recruiting the right police? How do we start making sure that police officers that we're trying to bring into the force are doing the right thing? And how do we recruit from a more wider, diverse group of police officers? That is something that you have to do intentionally rather than waiting and sitting back and depending on sort of previous practices that existed in policing.
Another explanation people have offered is a boom in gun sales last year, and 538.com did an analysis showing the time to crime, when a gun is bought to when it shows up in a crime, jumping a lot last year. Is the availability, apparently wider availability of guns, part of the story here?
Absolutely. I think both the increase in gun sales and the increase in reported guns found by police agencies while seizing guns at crime scenes has been a significant issue and has led to, in large part, a lot of the violent crime we are seeing, particularly when those cases, when we talk about homicides, the spike in homicides, somewhere between 80 and 90% of those homicides are associated to gun violence. A lot of those aggravated crimes or aggravated assaults are also associated to gun violence. And that is something we need to sort of take into consideration, particularly as so many different states are starting to consider gun control legislation. How do we improve the existing legislation in gun sales that allows individuals to purchase a firearm, particularly as so many incidents have taken place across the United States?
We're talking about the increasing homicide rates in many U.S. cities. Janice Owama is with us, assistant professor in the Department of Justice, Law, and Criminology at American University. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to this increase in homicides last year and this year in particular? After years of declines, lower levels compared to, say, the 90s, how worried are you about your own safety in your community? And what do you want to see change, if anything? More police, different kinds of policing, community efforts, education, gun regulations. What do you want? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're talking about a rise in homicide rates in cities across the country. A recent ABC News story highlighted 12 major U.S. cities that have broken annual homicide records. At a 13th, Milwaukee, sitting at 193, six more than last year's record high. Janice Owama stays with us, assistant professor in the Department of Justice, Law, and Criminology at American University. You can join us at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your ideas on what might be causing this increase in violence, possible solutions to it. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to Amy in Green Bay. Amy, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I had two comments about why we might not or why we're having lesser police and more increase in crime. Number one, this whole idea of defund the police has been demoralizing to police, and many of them have just said, we're done and out of here. And as far as the cities seeing big increases, I know in Chicago, we're just a state line over, and they required vaccinations, and many of them said no, and they left and took jobs in suburbs or towns where they weren't forced to be vaccinated. So that are my those are my comments. Thank you.
Amy, thanks for the call. Janice, first of all, the defund the police slogan that came out of the protests you mentioned last year, is that part of the story here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think with following the police protests, it was associated to sort of the push towards defunding the police has led the morale behind police agencies pretty low. I think a lot of police agencies have unfortunately engaged in what we consider to be depolicing, where they've taken a step back from some of those responsibilities, whether consciously or unconsciously. I think to a certain extent, some of the surrounding issues associated to changes in policing, the removal of certain police chiefs, the departure of certain police chiefs that so many police officers follow, has left some police officers feeling like they're not certain how things are going to move forward. And of course, changes to some of the protocol associated to mandating vaccines has been a significant issue, particularly as the short turnaround has expected so many officers to sort of be vaccinated within a short time period. I do think that this is sort of the reason why police agencies not only need to focus on trying to engage with their citizens and their residents, they also need to have a conversation with their own officers and trying to develop what is a path for both increasing trust and legitimacy in their own communities, but also increasing trust within the agency, making sure that officers are aware of the changes before those changes take place. Having conversations with how it affects them and their families is something that we don't see happening because as soon as one leader leaves, another leader comes in with an agenda with very little conversations, very little understanding about what that change is going to look like.
Thanks a lot for that call, Amy, at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Micah in Elgin, Illinois. Micah, hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. One thing that I wanted to talk about is that this is
not surprising at all, honestly. I'm a communications major, and a lot of what I have studied this past semester has been social unrest and all of the structures that go into crime and stuff like that. And honestly, this is kind of the tipping point. This is something that has built up for a long, long time, you know, with the pandemic, with people losing their jobs, with just a whole lot with all the police issues. People are tired. People are scared. People are angry. And unless these systemic issues are resolved, then we're not going to see a lot of peace.
Micah, thanks a lot for that call. Janice, Micah sees systemic issues here that aren't going to be solved quickly.
Yeah, absolutely, Micah. You're right about that. I think there is a need for change, but that change should not be going back to what we used to do or what has been done in the past. I think when we talk about change, and I walk into so many of these community meetings that happen to engage with police agencies, people are not looking to go back to previous practices or looking to go back to things that they've done in the past, but they're looking for innovative ways. They're looking for a new path, a new change, rather than simply trying to go back. I mean, a lot of the issues we see with policing, we saw in the 1960s and 70s. This isn't old news. This isn't new news. Rather, this is old news. This is something we've seen before. When we talk about, you know, discriminatory policing, when we talk about racial profiling, these are issues that have taken place in the United States for a very long time. But we've oftentimes done very little and hope that with a certain change or a certain policy in place, we might be able to get rid of it. But the truth of the matter is, these are conversations that need to happen every day, they need to happen every month, and they need to continue happening. As soon as an issue goes away, we shouldn't stop having these conversations. What we need to do is really think outside of the box, and police agencies need to be part of that conversation. Policymakers need to be part of that conversation as much as community leaders.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking about an increase in homicides, especially in U.S. cities, with Janice Owama from American University. Back to your calls now. Matt is with us in Bemidji, Minnesota. Matt, hi. Are you there, Matt?
Hello.
Yep, go for it, Matt.
Yes. Hi. So the question I have is about what the data is generally showing when it comes to the spatial and neighborhood areas where the increase in homicide is occurring. And then I'm also curious about the actual context of these homicides. And the reason I'm asking these questions is based on what I've seen in the data over past years in my line of work, a lot of homicides, it's usually about half, tend to be lovers quarrels, and then a good number of them as well are between friends and people, you know, they get angry with each other. And so I'm just wondering if, like, contextually, just people are under more stress, et cetera, that's leading to this.
Interesting, Matt. Thanks for the call. A couple of big questions there, Janice. First of all, how localized this violence is. I've talked to researchers in the past who say a lot of times you could really focus in on a few, you know, city blocks even to find a lot of the violent crime. Do we know yet, again, given that we still don't have all the data for this year, of course, do we know how localized this violence is?
No, absolutely. So far from what we know from some of the major cities that are already providing that data on their own websites, we've found that, as you've noted before, violent crimes is very focused on just certain city blocks. It's affecting a very small number of communities and a very small number of people, even with gun violence more broadly, not only murders, but talking about gun violence in general. People that are being affected by that every day of their lives are living in those particular areas, and it's really not evenly distributed across the city. We found from a recent survey very much an illustration of that. There's so many people that discuss defunding the police. People in those particular areas that really are experiencing and traumatized by gun violence are not asking. They want police to be involved in it. They want police to help deal with their everyday situation, which is gun violence. It is a real problem. It is a real problem for a small number of people, small number of communities, and it is definitely something that needs to be addressed.
And Matt also brought up the issue of domestic violence homicide. Do we know how big a part of the story of record homicides that is?
Unfortunately, with domestic violence, we know of those cases that are being reported. Domestic violence in general is an extremely underreported crime. Even more so during the pandemic, we found that of those surveys that have been done of a number of households, that in domestic violence incidents, very few were reported. We saw a slight drop even though we know for a fact that that is not the case, because so many people just did not want to make those calls during the pandemic due to concerns, again, of social distancing. But with so many people at home, the assumption is, due to the level of unrest, that there was an increase in domestic violence. And unfortunately, those were the cases, both for the victims themselves and police agencies, that became so difficult to respond to, particularly during the height of the pandemic.
Thanks for that call. Just in our last minute and a half, Janice, so many of the things you're talking about don't sound like they have quick fixes. That said, if a mayor of a big city facing this problem called you up and said, is there something we can do to try to turn things around for 2022, what suggestions would you have for them?
Absolutely. There are not any quick fixes. By no means do I want to sell that point. But there are ways to begin having these conversations. There are so many cities that are starting to engage in some innovative practices. For example, when we talk about some of those everyday incidents like traffic stops and the concerns with discriminatory policing, racial profiling in traffic stops, there have been a lot of cities that, for example, have gotten rid of making the primary reason for stopping an equipment violation in order to increase the trust and legitimacy with their citizens, in order to reduce the number of altercations that could potentially take place. There's a lot of communities that have also started developing more opportunities for engaging in conversations, trying to get citizens to report any citizen complaints, not in person, but via an app. I think some of these innovative practices that are already taking place in some of the major cities like New York City, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., are something that cities have to start taking a look at and seeing, you know, are these effective? If they were able to implement them in their own city, would it help some of those issues that are currently in place? Would it help address some of the concerns that their citizens have? I think we need to start looking at what other places are doing to try to incorporate that rather than starting from scratch. I also think people need to start thinking and getting into conversations, not necessarily in person, but virtually, because there is an opportunity, there is a platform, and there are a lot of people that want to be supported. There are a lot of people that want their concerns addressed. And so I think with so many new police leaders coming into place, this is a great opportunity to change the way things are.
So we'll leave it. Thanks to our guest, Janice Owama, assistant professor at American University's Department of Justice, Law and Criminology, joining us for a look at rising homicide rates.